Race fans, Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drani, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
It's that time again when Florida's best super late model racers tackle the high banks of Lakers USA International Speedway in the Michael Holly Chevrolet 200, presented by Catch 47. It's the third and final race of the Guaranteed Concrete Florida Triple Crown, and with all your favorites expected, the action will be intense. The Catch 47 presents the Michael Holly Chevrolet 200, Saturday night, September 1st. For more information, check online at usaspeedway.com. Tickets are on sale now. Call USA International Speedway at 1-800-984-7223. USA International Speedway. If you thought your weekends go fast.
This is O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. This is O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane.
Terry, I think you hooked up a pretty good guest for this week's show.
Well, yeah, he was talking a while ago about he's getting old and forgets things, but I think that comes with age. But yeah, Butch Miller is our guest tonight, folks, and I go back. Butch doesn't know me until I talked to him the other day, but I know Butch from way back, and I'm not going to say how many years at the old ASA. Welcome to the show, Butch.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Butch, I was up at Orange County Speedway this weekend, and there was a little fascinating incident that I was hanging around. I was one of the taking pictures, and you guys were having a little talk with the ASA officials about carburetors, and I got to tell you, man, I really liked the way you handled that.
Well, okay. I don't know how I handled it, but you know, my opinion on officials, and this is going to be different than probably most, but I feel racing needs to be more like a dictatorship. And you know, when an official makes a rule or when an organization makes a rule, my choices are play by their rules or go play someplace else. So, you know, and what they pointed out on my carburetor looked to me, I agreed with them. So, you know, it was time to change the carburetor.
There you go.
Well, I wasn't there, and I don't know the issue, but I in all the years I've known Butch, I've actually never known him to ever get disqualified because of a rule and infraction. I don't think you ever have you, Butch?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, you have?
But, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can't say, you know, in all my racing, I've always gone to the gray area. I've done the gray area to the max, you know, and you know, I was down and ran a Triple Crown several years ago in Florida. And Mike Eddy was running it, and we were running it, and we won the race. And the next thing I know, old Charles Edward Howe was somehow he made his way into the tech area. And we were 19 pounds light on the right side of the car. And he talked the officials into throwing us out. Well, then when Mike Eddy went across to win the race, he was 11 pounds light on the right side, but that was okay because, you know, we were 8 more pounds heavy or light, you know. So, cheating, not on purpose.
But yeah. There are those gray areas always, huh?
Oh, you know, and it sure is a lot easier to win in the garage than it is on the racetrack. So, you know, if the rule is 34 and a half, then you better be 34 and a half. Don't run it at 34 inches, you know, or if you're talking in the spoiler area, you know.
Right, right.
And you know, that's the way I've always played. You know, it's just I cut it as close as I can.
Well, I followed Jack. I followed Butch throughout his whole career. He doesn't know it, but there's a lot of fans out there that follow drivers that they don't know.
Sure.
And Butch started out in the old – did you start out in the old ASA when Brian and Brian Robbins and his dad was running it?
Yeah, Rex. Oh, of course, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was kind of, ASA had been going for a couple years, and I didn't even know what it was, but we were just starting to branch out a little bit. You know, we'd go hit a race over here or go hit a race over there, and I really didn't even know what ASA was. But there was an ASA race down at Fort Wayne, you know, and... So, well, okay, down we go, and, you know, sure enough, we won the race. Well, we got done, and he kind of, you know, we had, if we had continued running, we could have got on some kind of a goofy program, you know, that would have, but I didn't even know what it was. So, you know, we didn't do it at the time. And, you know, I've run ASA a lot of years, and it's probably, you know, it's probably the most fun racing I've had, and, you know, I've enjoyed it the most, and I wish I could do it again.
There you go. So, how do you compare it to? I mean, it's maybe a little tough comparison, but how do you compare the old ASA with what we got going here now?
I think it's what we've got going right now is very good. I think that yes, it's probably a step or two back from the tour car. But then the tour car actually got out of hand for a short track organization. You know, I think that we probably, you know, and I liked running. We didn't belong running at Atlanta and, you know, Charlotte. And it was just too expensive for the average short track racer that wanted to venture out and do something else, you know. And what they're doing right now, I think, is very good. I think that... they've got some ideas. I think some neat things are going to happen in the future. I talked to Ron Barney last week, you know, and he kind of gave me some stuff I don't want to talk about. You can talk to him about it, and he can give you, you know, if he wants to talk about it, that's great. But I don't know whether I should let the cat out of the bag without his permission. You know,
that's understandable.
Got some neat stuff coming in the future, and you know, I want to be a part of it, whether I can be part of it as a driver or a crew chief. I just I like the organization. I want to be there.
Now, did my question was, did Ron Barney in the interim, when he first got this series and started doing what he's doing, did he consult with anybody like you or some of the old-time ASA guys?
You know, I really don't know that. He did not consult with me. But, you know, I think that you know, at one point... they did bring a couple cars to Berlin, you know, the prototypes,
right,
of what the series is today. And Dave Sensaba and I had kind of a little match race, but they forgot to put enough gas in my car to have the match race. But, oh, well, you know, you got a 10-lap match race, and you got a pit for fuel. I don't know whether that's supposed to happen or not. But you know, they brought – that's about as far as, you know, as it went. But at that time, it seemed like a very good idea. And, you know, I'm sure that he has talked to Port City Racing, Ed Howe. Of course, you know, I'm sure he's coordinated a lot with, like, Five Star and ARP bodies, you know.
Right, right. Well, that's one thing that Jack has noticed with this ASA, that when you go through the tech line, you better be right, and they don't tolerate anything from anybody. They don't care who you are.
No, you know, but that's not necessarily a true statement. They give you some slack, and, you know, we are Saturday night racers. We don't need to have, you know, a template every inch going around the car like NASCAR does, or what's that? I forget what they call that thing, but they have a crane and they lower
right.
it down on the car and they
the spider.
And you know, we don't need that. We don't need to have a shop full of people trying to keep the body exactly right. So they are, as long as it doesn't appear that what we're, you know, if a template doesn't fit perfectly and it doesn't appear that we're trying to do that on purpose to get an advantage, they'll let us go. You know, they say, okay, get it a little bit better for next week, will you?
We were talking about one of the guys who got banned forever, and it was a body problem. And we were talking before the show.
And he said he'd won a lot of races, too, right? I mean, he was one of the top guns in the first few years.
Yeah, and it was a body problem, and I guess they told him to come back and be right, and he never did, so he had to hit the road.
Yeah, I think in that case, the body infractions got pushed week after week after week. And, you know, from an outside, I don't know exactly, because I'm an outsider looking at what's going on, and I've got to believe that the call was right, because you just, at some point, when you've given up, you know, you've given them enough chances, you got to do something about it.
Oh, yeah. I want to get into a little bit of your past, Butch. Like I said, I followed you for forever, and you may know these people. I used to work with the Schulers, Larry Schuler, Lee Schuler, Tracy Schuler. I was on their crew for 7 years, and that's where I first met you. I've actually met you at Grundy County Speedway 1 year,
okay.
And then you raced with
Trickle.
I'm sorry.
Is that the year I raced Trickle so hard?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because
absolutely.
There was 1 year at Grundy County, and you know, I've got to say, it wasn't my first feature win, but
right.
it was my first major feature win.
Right.
And I had Dick Trickle in my mirror for the whole 100 laps, and it's you know, I was probably that's one of my proudest wins.
Yeah, and you see Dick go by on a caution, and he have a cigarette in his mouth and light it up, and when he, you know, and I seen him and Tom Reffner race at Eliana at the Tony Bentenhausen race the same way 1 year. And Tom Reffner wouldn't let him by, but you raced against some really big stars, and progressing through your career in ASA, you even started racing with Rusty Wallace and Mark Martin and Alan Kulwicki and some of the huge stars in NASCAR. Then you moved up to I believe you moved up to the Truck Series right after that, and then to Busch, and then you ran for Travis Carter in the next Cup Series.
Well, actually, it kind of went different than that. But you know, if you look back, you know, you mentioned some really top-notch drivers. But you know, there was times when guys like Bobby Allison would show up and race, and
right.
You know, Dale Earnhardt, if anybody ever heard of him, you know, he would come to ASA Racing, and you know, what was cool about that is those guys were stars on NASCAR, but they'd come ASA Racing, and we'd whip them. You know, I mean, not just my team, but Mike Eddy, Bob Seneker, you know, Gary St. Amant, we'd whip those guys. And, you know, that would give us a good feeling, you know. And then as my career went on, okay, you had my order out a little bit, but I raced with ASA with Leroy Troop,
uh-huh.
and we started doing a little bit. We did a couple Busch races, and then we went NASCAR Cup racing, and we actually one time we went and bought a car from Ricky Rudd's team, which was Kenny Bernstein, I think, owned it at the time.
Right.
And we went out there and we found this car, and it was a new design, but Ricky had blown a tire with it and just junked the car to where they just kind of threw it over in a pile. And right. We went to a shop to buy a already built cup car, and Kevin Hamlin was with me at the time. We looked over at that car and we said, "Well, can we buy that one too, the one in the junk pile?" And he says, "Yeah, for $500 more, you can have it." And they were glad to get rid of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we just wanted to use it as kind of a gauge or a template or whatever you want to call it, so we would have something to look at, you know, if we decided to build a new car. Well, we put it in the corner of the shop, and we have to walk by it every day, and I kept looking at it, and I say, you know, there's a chance that thing could be repaired. And a couple days later, maybe we can repair that. And pretty soon I say, I think we can repair it. And pretty soon, I had a torch going, you know. And we fixed that thing and made it back into a race car. It took it to Richmond and sat on the outside pole over there with the Billy Elliott on the pole. Unfortunately, missed the pole by just a little bit. It would have been my only ever cup pole, but it was that was back in the old Leroy Troop friendly Undertaker days.
Right.
But okay, so anyhow, I went off to nowhere, but that was like in 89 and 90. I actually had 3 Winston Cup offers, and I chose Travis Carter, which was probably the worst one of the bunch, but I've, you know, if I've got a 50-50 chance, 90% of the time I'm wrong, so you know, I went ahead with Travis Carter. I did that, and then I went Busch Racing for a while, and then pretty soon the truck races started, and by then I'd gone back ASA Racing, but my for Jim Herrick out of Vermilion, Ohio, and at that time he says, "Well, we're going truck racing," so we started a truck team, and that's how I ended up truck racing.
Wasn't you one of the original ones?
We were. We ran the first race. And, you know, we didn't run those exhibition races, but we did run the very first official NASCAR truck race. And we were leading it with, I would say, 4 laps to go, and I got a left rear flat tire. Or we could have been the first winner ever, you know.
Wow. Wow. That would have been some history.
Disappointing, you know.
Yeah.
I think, did you race in the ASA race? You've raced at DeSoto Speedway in Florida in the ASA races, huh?
Was that... Actually, I've raced in DeSoto, and we've won a few in DeSoto, but I don't know if I've ever raced an ASA race. What I did do is, while I was truck racing, ASA was on TNN at the time, mm-hmm. and I did the broadcast from DeSoto.
Oh, okay.
So that's another part of my career, you know.
So I remember they
doesn't
start
happen anymore.
Yeah, they started coming down there in the late stages of the series there, and I remember Jimmy Johnson when he was the rookie of the year. He was down there, and that was a wild race, man. It tore up some ASA cars that day.
Yeah, and I think the problem was that the track actually tore up.
Turn 3.
It just, you know, if you got a half an inch out of the groove, you know, which was, the groove was a 2-track, you better have your left in one groove and the right tires in another groove, and if you got out of that, you just went wrecked.
That's exactly right. Turn 3 was coming up. That was before they fixed the track.
And turn 1 and 2 was... not very well either.
Straightaways were still good, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody handles really well down the straightaway.
Yeah.
So you've done all this, you know, I mean, you've been around this sport a long, long time, and you've raced against all the big names, and now we have this whole new thing with these kids. And about 5 years ago, I mean, Terry and I and some other people down at, I mean, we've been doing this broadcasting thing like, for a short track racing for a long time. And it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we started calling it the youth movement because we saw this coming. I mean, 12-year-old, 13, 14-year-old kids. And how do you see that, man? The ASA is just full of these young kids with talent.
Well, I don't know. I'm mostly, unfortunately, it's probably a bad thing to say, but I'm mostly jealous, you know, because when I started out, and now I'm gonna tell you my age a little bit. There was 2 things that were really different back then, and you know, people aren't gonna believe this, but first off, you couldn't get in the pits until you were 18. That was the first thing that happened. Unless you figured out how to lie or change your driver's license, you couldn't get in until you're 18. The second thing was there was no women in the pits back then.
That was the best thing about it.
Oh, come on. No, that was not a good thing.
That always leads to an argument.
but that's that's how things have changed over the years.
I don't know if you've heard the name B.J. McLeod.
Sure have.
Well, I was his PR guy when he was 13 years old,
right,
until 14. And I got him in an ASA race at Kenley, North Carolina, when he was 13 years old.
And 13 years, 8 months.
But,
he was 13.
That was the last couple of years of the Robbins family. And then he broke some records of being the youngest person to do some things. But now it's not even a second thought that you see a 13 or 14-year-old race car driver in some late models.
Yeah, I know it. And, I don't know. I'm still not positive that's good or bad or whatever, but it's sometimes it's hard. And a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times those kids are not in there because they want to be in there. They're in there because the parents want to be in there.
Exactly. So,
and, but like I say, that's not always the case. I think if you could have seen me at 12 and 11 and 13 years old, I probably would have been, if my dad would have gave me a race car and put me in the race car, I would have worked on that thing 24 hours a day and done everything I could so I could race next week. I wanted to race that badly. I think there's still kids like that, but they're not, the majority of them are not.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned earlier, Butch, that you would like to drive one of these new ASA cars. What's the chances of you getting in one of Sean Murphy's backup cars before the end of the year?
Well, actually, I've run a couple races, I don't know if I'm going to run any more this year. I don't think so. But I've run a few races, last one being Cayuga. And actually, Sean and I raced against each other, and we both put the same trick part in the car. So this trick part was so good that we fought for last place for the whole day. And I might add that I finally beat him out by one position. that's my claim to glory for this year. But, you mentioned Sean Murphy. And, he gets better every week. He is a great... He's one of those naturals.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I don't know how to describe him, but you give him the race car, he goes out on the racetrack, and when he comes back in, that's as fast as that car was going to go. That's it. I don't care who you put in it. There's nobody on earth that's going to make the car go any faster, and he just made it go, he has a couple little things that we're working on, and one of them is that he's so good at what he does that when the car isn't right, he changes his driving to make the car work better, which is okay during the race, but it's not okay in practice. In practice, we need to change the car to make it go faster instead of, so that part is a little tough on us, that the fact that he's good at making a bad car go.
Right, right. That was one of your attributes, too, in my opinion. No matter what kind of piece you got, you're going to run up front no matter what.
Yeah, but I worked on making that piece good before I ever got in it. And, that's kind of a neat part, and the part I like with Sean is we go out there, and if the car isn't right, well, pretty soon he says, Butch, hop in it. And I'll get in it, and I say, oh, no wonder you can't drive this thing. And we'll make a couple of adjustments, and he'll go back out there, and he'll go faster than I was going in it.
Right. But do you think, Jack, just jump in if you...
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Terry and I have interviewed Sean on this show a couple times, and we talked to him after the Bristol thing, as a matter of fact. But You know, do you think he has done a lot of things? I mean, he's not that old for what all he's done. I mean, he's traveled around Europe and all that. Do you think all that other kind of racing kind of helped him?
I don't, you know, I can't say that. You know, I don't know. You know, I know he's done some a lot of road racing, and, you know, he's done some racing in Florida. But I think that probably, you know, what I've seen in the past two or three or four races that I've been watching him is he's a much improved racer over the beginning of the year. And, you know, all we have to do is he is so close to not just winning an ASA race, but to winning several.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was going to get one at Orange County. Just couldn't get that low groove to work.
He, you know, it was a matter of if we could have, you know, magically closed up the stagger a quarter of an inch, he would have got by and probably drove off because he was the fastest car. But because the car was just a little bit on the free side, kind of burned the back tires off trying to pass for the lead.
Yeah.
I talked to Sean, getting your phone number, and he told me that he tried every which way to get around him because of that one groove track. He had a problem with it.
Yeah.
So, and he said he was up beside him
a bunch.
Yeah.
Well,
and
he drove. You know, he got what that car had to offer. He got every ounce of it out of that car. He drove just a wonderful race. And, you know, I was so proud of him at the end of that thing. He didn't wreck the leader. He could have wrecked the leader to win the race.
He
didn't do that. He tried to pass fair and square. And, you know, that's a Butch Miller way of racing as far as I'm concerned. You know, if you can't pass fair and square, then you shouldn't win. You know, and the guy gave him room, and John did the best he could. And you know, he just ran a great race.
Now, Sean told me that gentleman made the car as wide as possible.
He did pretty good. You
know,
I think Sean would have probably, if Sean was in front and the other guy was trying to pass him, Sean would have been equally as wide.
Yeah, that's racing, right?
Yeah.
Butch,
you know, he gave him room. He just didn't give him the best room, you know. He didn't move over and let John by, which would have been nice.
Well, one thing we've been doing this year is we've been interviewing a lot of these guys, especially when the first several shows. When we get a guy on we've never had before, we like really, you know, go deep into their background and stuff and try to find out everything they've done in racing and get their attitude and all that, you know. How important is, like, the desire, you know? Like, how important, I mean, is there a difference between having the talent to put a car around the track and the desire to win?
Yes, because you've got the talent to put a car around the racetrack doesn't mean that you're going to win, you know. And I'm probably the perfect example of that. As far as the seat of the pants racer, I probably was above average. You know, nowhere's near like a Bob Seneca was, you know, or maybe even a Sean Murphy, you know. But Sean's got a desire to win. He was disappointed he won, but he was also proud of how he ran the other night. You know, what's goofy about Sean is he is so even keeled. You can't believe it. You know, he had the Bristol race won till the last 200 yards. And when the car was over, I mean, when the race was over and he'd lost the race, you know, and I would have been throwing everything. I'd have been tipping the toolbox over. He was just smiling and just a, you know, normal, same old Sean.
Yeah, I was getting ready to ask you about how his reaction was, because I told Terry. Terry immediately told me we need to get him on the show, and I waited a couple of days before I called him. I was a little, you know, I didn't know how touchy that would be.
You could have interviewed him 5 minutes after it was over, and he gave you a great interview. The other thing is if one of us on SS Racing makes a mistake and we do something wrong, he doesn't bury us. He doesn't say we're a bunch of idiots, you know. Oh, we'll get it next time. and he means it.
His name's not Kevin Harvick, you mean?
That's right.
Now, Terry.
Or Denny Hamlin.
Speaking of that, Butch, I mean, I know I'm not. We're not trying to hang you out here, but we always ask. I really like to ask the guys. We asked Bug Stevens last night the same question on a different show we do. What's your take on the way? What's your take on the way NASCAR has gone?
Okay, in what way?
Well, it's obviously the NASCAR was. You know, we talk to people all the time who you know kind of have a complaint about. They've gone away from the short tracks, and it's all about business and money, and they kind of feel like
ruining the Saturday night racing.
Ruining Saturday night racing. These are the things we hear all the time, and it's not cool like it used to be. You know what I mean?
Just give you a heads up, Butch, on what Dickie Anderson said.
There you go. There you go.
He said it's like wrestling.
Well, could be. I don't know if I'd go that far. You know, I do think I don't know what the answers are to fix NASCAR, but I do think they have a problem. You know, all their players. You know, if I don't know what happened to Juan Pablo and Kevin Harvick. You know, but doggone it, they need to let a little bit of that go. You know, I thought it was pretty cool, and it made for a fun thing to watch yesterday. You know. I don't like it when they make everybody, you've got to say what you're supposed to say, act like you're supposed to say. If you don't do exactly say what they want you to say, you get fined $25,000. You know, I don't like that part of it. You know, I don't know how to fix racing. You know, I missed the Saturday night races. And, you know, I look back at the old NASCAR, and the neat part of that was that the fields were, instead of being 3/10 apart, they were 3 seconds apart. So a guy could virtually start at the back on a restart and pass everybody. Well, that was kind of entertaining. In fact, that was probably the most entertaining part of racing, was watching somebody come from the back to the front. Well, now the only way you get from the back to the front is by a pit stop.
That's the way that's the way dirt racing is, and dirt late models, for instance. I mean, we go up to East Bay Raceway during the Winter Nationals, a guy will be, you know, pick up 8 spots on one lap, you know, and the fans like that. It's exciting.
That's what, back in the heyday of short track, non-NASCAR races, you qualify, and if you were the fast time, you started at the back of 20 cars.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, that, now I was sitting in the grandstands back then, but that was fun to watch a guy go, you know, in 10 laps from the back to the front. That was really neat.
And then sometimes he didn't make it.
No, he didn't make it, but, you know, there was always battles going on. And now it's just kind of, I don't know, it's...
You know,
it seems like all the races are the same.
You know, that's I will watch. They play on Speed, and I guess some of the other channels. They play old NASCAR races over again, like from you know, a long time ago,
back in the day,
and I guess in the 70s or 80s, whatnot. Those races, I'd rather watch those. I rarely watch a NASCAR race. I'll watch the last 20 laps of a NASCAR race now. But those races a long time ago are entertaining to watch.
And nowadays, Butch, I hate to say this, but they look scripted. And, you know, when Dickie Anderson is like wrestling, I can understand his point. And like the Pocono race where the rain came and Brian Newman was just about ready to pass Jeff Gordon, and then Brian Newman got up to his door, and then they throw the yellow flag. You know, that one was almost too obvious. And it's just a deal where that a lot of the 9% they're down from the TV ratings from last year, and even more from the year before. So they peaked out, and then they made a mistake. That car tomorrow is the most horrible-looking thing. I mean, everything's fine, but if they would have put a spoiler on the back instead of a wing, I could accept it. But with a wing on the back like that, nah. I'll never accept the car tomorrow.
I'm going to get mad at me, but I'm going to disagree with you.
There you go. There you go.
I think that that car is. Have you ever looked at the You know, when they show a picture of a NASCAR Cup car, the non-car tomorrow, they show it from the roof. The car is shaped like a banana. The roof is in the middle. The nose is way over to the right, and then you go around, and the tail is way over to the right. The car is just built crooked completely for downforce, and the things look stupid. Well, the car tomorrow is kind of symmetrical, so they look, to me, they look more like a car you'd see on the street. Now, the spoiler, how many spoilers do you see that on the street that look like a spoiler that you see on the normal NASCAR cars? But the car tomorrow, they're on all the cars. If a car today has a spoiler on it, it looks like the car tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. That's true.
That is
true. I never looked at it that way.
That's absolutely true.
And the one thing I do...
I think they're going the right way. I really do. I think the cars... I think they've had some pretty good races with those cars, too. I mean, compared to...
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. It's just... You know, I like the bumpers matching up, the bumper matching up with the rear bumper and the front bumper. I love that fact. Because you know how many cars have been ruined just because they went underneath of somebody else in these other cars?
Yeah.
And the bumpers matching up, even in the race on Sunday, they said that there were going to be less cautions because the bumpers match up. Well, they didn't end up having less cautions, but the thought was good.
For a road race, that was a really good race.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
however, I, you know, and this is cool. Excuse me, going back to the short tracks, I mean, it's bleeding back to the short tracks. In NASCAR, it is okay to wreck the guy to pass him. And
exactly.
For the life of me, I don't understand that.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, I've only been around this sport of stock car racing for about 15 years, really. And that is something I've never I bring that up all the time to the diehard NASCAR fans. It seems to me, how can you have a sport where you can I mean, you go through all this technical stuff to follow rules, and then you can just go out and punch somebody in the nose and win the fight? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, when I look back at what happened to Robbie Gordon a couple weeks ago, where he got spun after the yellow had already been out, so he got spun. So when he, you know, they said, well, he failed to maintain caution or cautious speed, I think they called it. You know, okay, which he did. All right. So he was supposed to blend in there in 14th or 15th or wherever. All right. Now, what that's telling me that is if there is a yellow with 10 laps to go and there's a guy in front of you that is faster than you, spin him. On the yellow, when you get a chance to where you can catch him, spin him right then and there. He can't maintain cautious speed, so he have to blend in 14th or 15th, and you'll win the race. That's wrong.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And
it's got to be
what was coming when Robbie stayed there in second place, didn't you?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a hothead, but you know he's at least he is not one of those. Cookie cutter drivers.
No.
Well, you know,
Tony Stewart, he's not a cookie cutter driver. You know, I don't always agree with what Tony does. I don't like the fact that Tony can dish it out but can't take it. But he's not a cookie cutter driver, and I do like that part of him.
Yeah, like Ryan Newman, and I think a lot of the guys that came from USAC, you can say that. Jeff Gordon, Casey Kane, and it's a deal where. There's so much money in NASCAR now, Butch. I think that's some of NASCAR's decisions based on the dollar more times than not and not on what the fan base wants. And But I think you're right. They peaked, and now they're going through a little down period, but I think they're going to peak again.
Well, there is some silliness.
It's going to be like the stock market or like real estate. It, you know, it flies up, and then it, I forget the word they've got for it, but it kind of just averages back down again to where, you know, it normalizes or whatever, you know. And I think that's what they're going through. It peaked and it came down, but it's going to probably level off and then just have a normal rise from then on.
Let's switch gears here for a second. You know, we were talking to the who is the gentleman, Terry, with the head safety guy that we were talking to?
Ross.
Yeah.
Chapman.
Yeah. We were talking to him, and it was a funny thing came up about the north and south thing. Now, how is stock car, short track stock car racing different in the north and the south from your perspective, Butch?
You're asking me that?
Yeah, I am.
You know what? Anymore, it's like in the old days, you know, back when they had the ASA and they had All Pro, and then they had, showed up in New England in Canada.
Cast car?
Ricky Craven actually ran that series up. I forgot what they called it.
Cast car or something?
Well, it's cast car now, but anyhow, when ASA would go down and race All Pro, you better be ready to read the rules really, really well, because those guys were, and take Pensacola. One year I'm down at Pensacola, and it's probably the greatest cheat, and it came from an All Pro guy. I'm not going to say who, but he's in jail now. But
oh,
so okay. I'm not going to say who. Okay,
all right.
But anyhow, it's probably the greatest cheat I ever saw. They pushed it across the scales to go out and qualify. And they pushed it across the scales, and the car reads the perfect weight it's supposed to read. And they push it off the other side, and from underneath the car crawls a guy who'd been sitting up on top of the fuel cell.
Wow.
So he had human ballast in there. He went out and qualified 150 pounds light or whatever that guy weighed, you know.
Holy
wow.
Cow.
And nobody ever opened the trunk?
Well, no. He just went across and got weighed, and I'm not sure the trunks would open back then. You know, they were just stacked up on top of the fuel cell.
Maybe we just gave several thousand drivers an idea.
So was that a state?
That was like one of the greatest cheats I've ever seen. You know, you go down there also, you know, one time a driver, he goes to get weighed to go out on the racetrack. I don't remember if it was for the race or qualifying, but they're pushing the car across the scales. Well, they've got to bring him up on a four-wheeler because he weighs so much he can't walk.
And holy moly.
Literally lift him into the car. He's got, I don't know, ballast strapped all over him. You know, and he gets in, gets weighed, gets back out, takes all the ballast off, and goes out and races.
Wow.
So you had to, you know, you had to deal with that when you went south the race.
Wow.
And I believe it's changed since then, you know.
I can't wait to run this show and let everybody call in.
Oh, my.
That's fascinating.
Don't give him my phone number, okay?
I will not give him your phone number, but.
Well, see, that's an argument the other side of the coin. We asked Don Nerone. I don't know if you probably know Don Nerone, but promoter.
Oh, I like Don.
Yeah.
That's a good man. That's a good fair.
Absolutely.
He threw us out this year already.
Yeah, is that right?
You know, and we went down, we took Sean down to New Smyrna, our first races. And Sean, right away, he sat on the pole the first night. Second night, he had, I believe, second quick time. And the third night, our last night that we were going to race there, he had fast time. Well, they said, we're going to take a gas sample. Okay, take a gas sample. And pretty soon, about a half hour later, guy comes over and he says, your gas isn't legal. I said, what? And I said, we're just running it. It's Sunoco. It's Sunoco with 10% ethanol.
So right.
We have a, you know, a very low octane fuel, you know, nothing spiced up to make it. But Don says, well, the ethanol is what's ruining our, which, you know what, makes sense. It was ruining all his tests. He says, we have a series of five tests we do. And he says, you flunk all five tests. And he says, finally, the last test, He says, the hillbilly test. He took a styrofoam cup, and he poured our gas in the styrofoam cup. It ran right out the bottom. So we flunked. But I like Don. He is a good man.
He's a
nice man, a fair man. And he might have been the guy that threw me out years ago at DeSoto.
he's
19 pounds. Now, that's the one time he wasn't fair. We were 19 pounds, and Mike Eddy was 11. So that's the one time he might not have been quite fair, you know.
Yeah, we're always asking Don, you know, why can't you get these guys from up north to come down here and run with you guys like you did in the old days, you know. He's always saying, they don't want to come down here and get their butt handed to them or something like that.
Well, Butch,
if you ever have a problem, that man will give you the shirt off his back.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Ain't no doubt about it.
We've kept you quite longer than we expected, Butch, but it's been a joy. And I know we held you up from dinner. And we'll let you go at the moment. If we could have an open invitation to interview you again down the road, we sure would like to do that.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right,
Butch.
Wish you the best of luck with Sean and the rest of your endeavors this year. And, man, thanks for spending
time. All we need is a little luck because Sean can drive a race car.
There you go.
Do you think, Sean, I got one last question. Do you think with the contacts that you have that you can possibly get Sean to the next level?
Well, I don't know if my contacts are good enough to do that. You know, it's there's certain steps you've got to go through, and really what's got to happen is he's got to get noticed here. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to get noticed.
Okay.
You know, there's been the last, couple years here, there's been some guys come out of ASA and go racing, you know, so it's going to happen.
He's
doing what we're doing, and he's going to get noticed.
Stephen Like is won a Busch Series race this year. He's probably the most known one.
Yeah, he's doing well. Kelly Byers is doing good.
All right, Butch.
Thank you.
And we sure appreciate it, and apologize to the missus for us.
Okay.
And we'll catch you down the road.
You eat so late. You know. It's your fault tonight.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Well, just buy her a T-bone steak.
Okay.
Thanks, Butch.
Okay.
We'll see you down the road, sir.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Butch All right, Miller.
Butch Miller.
There you go, man.
When we were doing the production for this show, I told you that we'd probably talk to him for a while. He was a talker.
This is O'Reilly ASA Fastlane.
It's that time again when Florida's best super late model racers tackle the high banks of Lakers USA International Speedway in the Michael Holly Chevrolet 200, presented by Catch 47. It's the third and final race of the Guaranteed Concrete Quarter Triple Crown, and with all your favorites expected, the action will be intense. The Catch 47 presents the Michael Holly Chevrolet 200, Saturday night, September 1st. For more information, check online at usaspeedway.com. Tickets are on sale now. Call USA International Speedway at 1-800-984-7223. USA International Speedway. And you thought your weekends go fast.
This is O'Reilly ASA Fastlane.